The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
Well, welcome in, everybody. Frank Bassett joining you from the Nashville studios after the RBC Canadian Open just ended yesterday. And Tim Matthews is on assignment of some sort. I don't know what it is, but every time he's on assignment, it's at some resort somewhere. And I think he's high up in the mountains of New Mexico. Tim, where are you?
Yes, I am. I'm kind of like Butch Cassidy in Sundance. I'm on the run from the law. And I find myself hiding out in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Yeah, now I'm here, and it's for business on my wife's side, something she's got to do for her business. And so I tagged along, if you will. I'm the spouse in every conversation. And so, I highly recommend if people haven't been to Santa Fe to give it a shot anywhere in the country. Santa Fe is a great, great place. Very pretty, very clean. It's a bit of a throwback. They don't want to go too much forward, and they have technology, right? They have Wi-Fi and all this kind of stuff, but they're kind of a slow community, and it's kind of neat. It's very artsy, you know, galleries and sculptures and things all over the place. And so it's a very, very cool place. Some nice golf courses around here as well. So I do recommend it. And if you're in the heat, as you kind of alluded to, we're at like 7,000, a little over 7,000 feet.
Wow.
Here we're at. So it's cool, you know. So if you're certainly where I'm in Dallas or in Texas or anywhere that's got a lot of heat, it's a great place in the summer to get away, because even in the summer, it might get up to 80, but at night it gets down to low 50s. It's just a nice break from all the weather that. So right about now, Rory McIlroy is probably flying over Santa Fe on his way from Canada to Palm Springs, although he probably did it last night after he wrapped up the Canadian Open. That was a pretty impressive final round, wasn't it?
It was incredibly impressive. The funny part about that, oh, by the way, let me back up before we go there. So at 7,000 feet, it's 2 yeah. degrees, I believe, per 1,000 feet of temperature inversion as you go up.
Oh, okay.
So if it's 80 degrees and you go 7,000 feet, it's 14 degrees below 80, which whatever that is, right? I went to Ole Miss. I can't.
66.
Count. Yeah, there you go. So yeah, it's cooler. Yeah. Now let me ask you this: what's playing golf at 7,000 feet? It's a different breed of cat. Now you're gonna. It's two clubs, right? About two clubs different.
Yeah, about two clubs. They say at this, and I played here. I played in Colorado, and I played at other altitudes. The neat thing to me is, the clubs, you got to get used to it, because the ball does carry further. So that's part of it. But and you kind of get feeling good about yourself for a while, then you get depressed when you go back down to sea level. But to me, what I love about playing at elevation is really just the scenery of it, right? I mean, whether my ball goes further or not, just you get on some of these vistas that you can stand on the tee box, and the fairway seems like it's 500 feet below you with a curve. It's just gorgeous views that you get. And then there's mountains off in the distance. There's still snow in the mountains here, Frank. I mean, it's on the very top of the mountains that I can look out and see there's snow up there. So it's gorgeous to be able to play golf in a place that. And it's kind of, here's what's weird too, is you notice I went for a run yesterday and I don't run far. So I'm not Mr. Marathoner, but I run a mile or two. And I'm telling you, in about, I'd say it wasn't quite a mile. I'd say I probably ran, 50 yards. And I'm going, I'm like, oh my God, what the heck is happening? So yeah.
Low oxygen.
Yeah. Get you too with your oxygen too, because I didn't quite make the Olympic time that I was going for with my run yesterday, because it catches you at 7,000 feet. It's different, which they talk about when people go and play the Denver Broncos and other teams play. What do they have to do? They always see those guys on the sidelines from other cities with the oxygen on, because if you're not used to that altitude, it can really suck the wind right out of you.
Yeah, I bet. Well, you ran at the Masters. Every year you're at the Masters with us, you get up early and run around the neighborhood three or four times. Yeah. Yeah, not me. Mm-mm. Bloody Mary. But anyway, so you mentioned it. McIlroy shoots 67, 66, 64, 61 for a tournament record 258, 22 under par. And on the back nine, and you know this as well as our listeners know it, but I'm going to say it anyway, we were on 58 watch. Then we were on 59 watch. Yeah. Then we were on the course record 60 watch that Snedeker set this year. He shoots a 61, ends up bogeying 18, shoots a 61, but still the tournament record for low score, 258. which was matched, I guess, by Kuchar early in the year in Hawaii. So it's unbelievable. And listen to this. McIlroy, Lowry, Simpson, and Snedeker all shot all four rounds in the 60s.
Right.
Unbelievable. Kuchar just really didn't impressive. Have his best stuff on Sunday. He shot a 70, and so did Adam Hadwin, which was the Low Canadian. So he wins the trophy for Low Canadian in the tournament. But I thought, okay, RBC Canadian Open, PGA Tour event, we love them, but it's not going to be as exciting as, you know, when Tiger's there and everything else. It was very exciting Sunday.
Yeah, it was.
I was glued to it.
It was. I mean, it was, and Rory, you know, that's the thing about Rory that can either excite you or frustrate you is any given week, he can do exactly what he did this past weekend, or he can miss a cut. At a tournament, you're like, well, it's not that hard a course, blah, 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 and why did he miss a cut? And Rory's kind of symbolic, I think, of today's tour players. I mean, we've talked about this a number of times. The days of Tiger going 9 years between missing cuts is never going to happen. Never. I mean, a guy barely can get through a season without missing a cut nowadays because probably a lot of reasons. But I think in large part, there's just not that burning motivation of always playing your best. You kind of see guys take a little bit of time off. If they know they're maybe not, they're on the borderline, I think they kind of maybe are thinking ahead to the next tournament or major or whatever. So if you're, and I'm not degrading them, but if you're top golfer, if you're Spieth or Ricky or Rory or any of those guys, I think on a Friday and you're kind of hovering around the cut line, there's sometimes where you're like, okay, am I going to grind or am I just going to finish these last five holes and get on the plane and get ready for the Masters coming up or the US Open or whatever. And I think that they can fall into that a lot of times. And Tiger, unlike almost any other golfer ever, maybe like a Michael Jordan, won't let that happen. And those guys just don't come along very often, where they won't let themselves not even make a cut. Even if it's making a cut and finishing tied for 28th at the end of the day on Sunday, they don't want to miss a cut. And today's guys, I think it's almost like, yeah, a couple of days off would be good. Just like you watch NBA players who miss regular season games because they're not injured. It's a long season.
They're worn out. they're worn out.
Suddenly it became like, you know, it's too long to play 82 games. I'd rather play like 72, so I'll miss it. Well, Jordan, again, I go, but maybe that's old school, but those guys didn't think about missing games because they'd just be tired. They're like, it's an 82-game schedule. Unless I'm hurt, I play 82 games. That's what I do.
Here's a deal. So you're playing for the Green Bay Packers, and you go up to Vince Lombardi and say, I'm too tired to play this game.
I'm a little bit tired.
Yeah, you'll be flipping something at Waffle House. It just doesn't happen, or didn't happen in the past, but it does now.
Yeah, listen, there's a point. That's why Rory can be frustrating sometimes, because he is obviously incredibly talented. And let's also mention, he shoots a 61. He bogeyed two of the last three holes.
Yes, with the 61.
And that's, you're talking about the 58, 59 watch. And, you know, at some point you're like, yeah, I was right there. Just make some par with him. So, you know,
this was his first appearance in this tournament, his first appearance, and he wins it in his first appearance. It's his 16th PGA Tour title. And interestingly enough, his sixth National Open.
I didn't know that. That's his sixth. So he's won like Irish Opens, Canadian Opens.
Absolutely.
Opens.
That's just unbelievable. And I think his game's ready for the Open, the U.S. Open, don't you?
He's geared up. He's ready. It's going to be one of those stats that they're going to be showing us. How many of you guys have won U.S. Opens after winning the previous week or not? If it's a good omen or a bad omen, kind of like winning the par three at the Masters. Is it any good? Well, it doesn't seem like in history, but then again, why should one relate to the other? So we'll see about that and how it plays out for Rory. He certainly has to be feeling really good about himself. As a matter of fact, do you want to hear what he had to say after the round, Frank?
Our very own Kevin Sylvester caught up with him. Yeah,
Kevin Sylvester was there with PGA Tour Radio and talked to Rory. So here's Rory following his very nice little 61 and finishing at 22 under yesterday to wrap up the RBC Canadian Open.
Rory, congratulations on your second win this year. Walked you with the players. I thought you showed some grit in that victory. You showed dominance today.
Yeah, it was really nice. I said to Harry walking up the last there, it's been a while. It's been a while since I've played like this and sort of put my foot down. But it was so nice to do it today. Obviously a huge confidence builder, not just for next week, but for the rest of the season. To go out tied for the lead and to play the way I did, to play with that freedom and play with, you know, no inhibitions and take driver and stay aggressive. You know, I think this will, obviously I'm very proud of what I've done today, and, you know, hopefully it sets up well for the rest of the year too.
Wanted something a little more too. When did you start thinking about that?
I think when I birdied 13, the par 3, went to 8 under, and And then obviously birdied 14 with that long putt, and I'm thinking, okay, here we go. So I was trying. It was in my mind, obviously, eagle in the 17th that really, it really put it into, focus. And you know, I just leaked a little 6-iron on 18 there. And, I was trying my best with a bunker shot, but wish I would have had a putt for it instead of a bunker shot. But I'm really proud of how I played today, and, can't wait for the rest of the season.
Yeah, we talked before the round and said, if I come back next year, you're coming back as a defending champion of the RBC Canadian Open, and I bet you can't wait.
I can't wait. The reception from these Canadian crowds have been unbelievable this week. I think I somewhat endeared myself to them by cheering for the Raptors on Sunday night when I went to the game. But they couldn't have been any better. I mean, they've been so welcoming all week. And, as you said, I can't wait to come back next year.
Okay, well, climb the hill, sign a card, and hoist the trophy. Congratulations.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
So there you go. That's a pretty happy Roy McIlroy with Kevin Sylvester after his round yesterday. Hey, let's go back to something you were talking about. I was just looking up some notes while we were playing that piece, and last player to win the week prior to a major championship, then win major championship, Roy McIlroy, the 2014 WGC FedEx St. Jude Invitational the week before the 2014 PGA Championship.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
It was him.
So it's right in his wheelhouse, yeah. Maybe he's going to feel even more comfortable to be able to do that. I do know that while he's feeling really good, I'm curious how Brooks Koepka is feeling. He finished middle of the pack, made the cut, but finished at 2-under, so he was only 20 shots behind Rory. And I don't know, again, in today's golf world, if those kind of things factor, if you're worried or not worried. He only had one round, actually, in the 60s. Frank, we're talking about guys all in the 60s. He only had one round, the second round. He was actually 2-over on the weekend. But he's going for his third straight U.S. Open title, and he would only be the second guy, I believe, ever, but certainly in the last century to do that. Willie Anderson did it like in 04, 5, and 6, or 5, 6, and 7, or something way back then, when you were still a freshman at Ole Miss, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm.
And so there's some history made there. But Brooks is kind of like that guy that, it's a regular tournament, which I don't seem to win many of anyway. I'm getting ready for a major, which I seem to really like to play well in and win. So it's going to be really interesting to see what both of those guys had different, totally opposite ends of the spectrum, but one makes the cut but kind of just finishes and the other wins the tournament in grand fashion. Be interesting to see how they both play, because they're going to be teeing it up in only a few days, and in that few days, how are their minds going to be ready for it? It seems like Brooks can come into any major, no matter what he's been doing the week before, and be ready to go. So I guess I expect that to happen, but we'll keep an eye on it, right, to see kind of if that average golf that he played in Canada, if it lingers at all at Pebble Beach.
Here's another interesting fact about this win. There in PGA Tour history, there are only six players who have won the U.S. Open, the Open Championship, and the RBC Canadian Open. Tommy Armour.
Like in their careers, you're
in
saying?
Their career, yeah, career.
Not in a year, okay.
Yeah, two have won those three in their career. Tommy Armour, Walter Hagen, Arnold Palmer, your friend Lee Trevino, Tiger Woods, of course, he's in every stat, and Roy McIlroy. Yeah. That's it. Six guys.
You're right.
That's a pretty interesting stat.
That is nice. Yeah, that is pretty good. I think I'm curious what the Canadian Open has been on a rotation. So different golf courses that they play. This one was in Hamilton, Ontario, the Hamilton Golf and Country Club. They moved around to different places. It seemed to certainly have a lot of great low scores. You mentioned earlier that Sneds almost shot a 59.
Yeah.
Certainly Rory was really close to it. A lot of guys, even Cooch in the second round had a 63. So a lot of guys are right in those mid 60s almost every round, or at least for two or three of their rounds. So I'm not sure if the Canadian Open certainly doesn't have the prestige as an Open Championship or a U.S. Open. But if you win a national title, if you will,
yeah.
I don't care if it's the Turks and Caicos Open. I'm
I don't think they have that one.
And there might only be six other guys I can beat to win one of those. But matter of fact, I'm going to look for that country that I can go compete against six other guys. It's pretty cool. I mean, a national title is a national title.
I don't know. I was trying to think of a country name that you could go compete. You and I both.
Hasn't come up with one.
Yeah, had come up. Yeah. Hey, six different national open titles. He won the UBS Hong Kong Open in 2011. He won the U.S. Open in 2011, the Emirates Australian Open in 2013, of course, the Open Championship in 2014, the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, hosted by the Rory Foundation. That's a lead in 2016, and of course the RBC Canadian Open this year, 2019. Those are the six different national open titles he holds. So
pretty impressive. When Trevino did it, he did it in the same year, which is kind of cool too.
Yeah.
He did it in about a 2 month spread where he won. I can't remember the order, but it might have been Canadian Open Championship and then U.S. Open, or U.S. and Canadian, then the Open Championship. But he won all three in 1 year, which is pretty cool. And the great thing, we've talked about the competitiveness for different tour stops. And even though this is an Open Championship, not again to diminish the Canadian Open, it falls in a category with a lot of other tournaments on the PGA Tour. It's not a major, so they try to get the field they can get. They're thrilled to death that Rory McIlroy will come back and defend that title.
Oh, sure.
And you know you're going to have him maybe forever, but certainly for the next several years, Rory will go back and defend that title. So it's really advantageous for them. You just know that the tournament directors and everybody affiliated with the Canadian were just going, Rory, come on, Rory, make a putt. I mean, to have him win is the glamour. To have a top guy like Rory McIlroy, and they almost always go back and defend if they win anywhere, no matter if it's a big tournament or not, they'll go back and defend almost every time. So good for them. Good for the Canadian Open. It gives Rory one spot more that he's going to fill out next year to where he's going to play, and it also diminishes one of those other places he might have thought about playing on the tour and say, I don't have time. I'm playing a Canadian because I got to go defend, so I can't play X, Y, or Z tournament. So that's the reality of tournament golf is some of these tournament directors and the volunteers and everybody that puts it together, they live and die by the field of how we're going to attract these guys and where they're going to want to go. And so Rory's got that one marked off his list right now. He knows he's going to be playing about this time next year up in the Toronto area. So,
well, it was certainly fun listening to our PGA Tour radio team, especially one Mark Zacchino, who I was just with the week prior up in French Lick. If you heard any of that show, that was a crazy show. but Zacchino is Mr. Excitement. He's, Golf Talk Canada, of course, the number one golf talk show in Canada. And you know why it's number one?
Why?
It's the only golf talk show in Canada. Do you know that? Uh-huh.
It's like me winning the Turks and Caicos Open.
There it is.
I'm the only
Zacchino said that, so it's not a throwdown to Mark. We love Mark Zacchino. But listening to him, I had the volume turned down on the TV, and I had the boy listening to our team. And Zacchino was just, out of control. He was so excited about everything.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Canadians had one. I mean, he came into this thing. He could have possibly pulled it off, but not when McIlroy comes out like a buzzsaw. Nobody can compete. And Webb Simpson, by the way, if you watched any of it, Webb Simpson strokes game putting 9.06.
Really?
Yeah. He didn't miss a second putt. And he had a lot of 5, 6, 10 footers for second putts. Didn't miss.
I'll tell you what, Canadian fans are
they're rabid fans.
For any kind of sport, and we're certainly seeing it. They may win an NBA title tonight against Golden State with the Raptors. But they really, really support their teams. They are diehard. And as alluded to right there, he's going to be thrilled to come back and play in Canada next year because the fans have been so supportive. But they really are. And I think that you noted that they kind of sometimes maybe – I lived in Canada I started school in Canada. So I lived there for about 7 years when I was a kid. And it was a long, long time ago. But Canadians, and I think they'll admit this, I'm not trying to talk out of school – have an inferiority complex with the U.S., right? They're kind of a lesser than, or some people consider that. But I'm telling you what, I'm just saying, everybody talks about the U.S., the whole world and the economy and blah, blah, blah. A lot of people don't hear much about Canada other than if you're a hockey fan. And they're fine with that. They're like, okay, that's what it is. But when it comes to sports, they're as good as any fan in the world. Yeah. They just love their athletes. They love their sports and they pull for They're Canadians. Blackhawks. They're Maple Leafs. They're teams that they've loved for years. And I think Rory saw it there too. And if you watch, you saw some great crowds.
Oh, it was packed
there in Hamilton, which again is outside of Toronto area. Some great fans. So anyway, good to see it and good to see him. I'm sure coming back next year there'll be even bigger crowds.
Well, here's another player that hasn't done anything since his 2016 Masters victory to speak of. 35 starts with nothing. He posted his first top 10, tied for 8th at 10 under par, and that was Danny Willett.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that was an interesting
name.
Yeah, we're 2016 when Willett won it, and pretty tough victory there in 16.
He finished at 10 under with Graham McDowell, and didn't Graham do something significant?
Graham
yesterday?
McDowell, here's the deal. For the first time, the RBC Canadian Open offered had three spots into the Open Championship. Of course, it's at Royal Port Rush, which is Graham McDowell's home. Okay.
Oh.
He had to finish.
This is all coming together. This is all coming together dramatically for him.
It is.
Go ahead. What happened?
He had to finish in the top 10. He had to finish in the top 10 to get in. And Adam Hadwin had to do the same thing. Adam Hadwin finished 6th at minus 12, and Graham McDowell finished tied for 8th at 10 under par. They're both team RBC ambassadors and qualified for the Open Championship. McDowell made one hell of a putt, a long breaking putt. On 18, that looked like I said he's not going to make it. I closed my eyes.
That's what got him in the open.
And you saw some emotion out of Graham. One of the best guys out there. One of the nicest guys. He's been on this show a bunch, and we're so proud of Graham McDowell for pulling that off. It's his home course, for God's sake. So
very cool.
So this tournament really had a ton of excitement. I'd love to see the ratings on this tournament because TV ratings, because it was really good. And a lot of people yawn. They go, the RBC Canadian Open. Okay, it's just a warm-up to the U.S. Open. No, the U.S. Open has to step up now to be as exciting as this one was. And I think the venue is going to help them do that. Pebble Beach is not the worst place.
I was just going to say, we'll talk more later in the week about Pebble Beach and about the U.S. Open. But I am curious, as everybody now quickly turns their attention to the next major and whoever you might like think of as someone to follow, always great storylines to be followed. Tiger coming after the Masters. Is he ready to compete again? You know, he's kind of been lukewarm since he won the Masters. And you got to think he's going to be psyched and ready to play at Pebble Beach. So where he's going to be, we talked about the fact that Koepka is going for 3 straight U.S. Open titles, and that would be historic, something Tiger, Jack, anybody else almost you want to mention? Because if I say Willie Anderson again, everybody's going to scratch their heads and say who's that guy? Yeah. So he'd be in really rarefied air for that to happen. And I don't know if it's even worth, do we still keep talking about Phil trying to win a U.S. Open? I mean, I guess so.
I think this is the last chance. I mean, let me say that a different way. I think this is his best chance.
He's closing in on 50.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so he hasn't been a spring chicken for a while, but he seems
he likes healthy, Pebble. Right? He loves Pebble.
He loves Pebble. Yeah, he loves Pebble, and he hasn't played well lately, and has kind of struggled a bit. But just like you said, sometimes there's divine intervention. Sometimes Graham McDowell makes a putt that normally would be an 8% chance of making that putt, and
pretty
it
much,
gets
yeah.
him into an Open Championship. Blah blah. All the other things that fall into maybe divine intervention. Maybe some other things will happen for Phil that you know he can finally get that career grand slam. Because you're right, there's the fact that he has to do it for a U.S. Open. I don't know what would be easier, but I mean, probably a Masters might be, because he's, you know, for people that play that course well, you can always compete. But a U.S. Open is, everybody always talks about how they set up the course and how tough the greens are, and they dry everything out and blah blah. You know, it is a very tough championship to win. Phil has figured that out. He's got what, 6 second place finishes?
Yes.
At U.S. Opens, I think that's right. That's 6 times that he could go back and say, on this one, on Sunday, if I didn't hit that bad bunker shot on the 12th hole, and I would have parred instead of bogeyed, I would have been in a play. You know, there's all those stories that could have happened that it could have turned a second place and a win. But anyway, the drama will be there. It'll be nice to see if Phil can at least give it a run. But Tiger, Cooch, Spieth, all the guys that kind of rise up, Ricky trying to get a major, all those storylines come up, and that's what makes – I'm so excited about this week. I'll be giddy just sitting in front of my TV all week, but certainly come Thursday, I'm just going to be watching nothing but golf.
Well, you know, 7:51 a.m. is the tee time for Jon Rahm, Mark Leishman, and Roy McIlroy. Right after them, 8:02 is Siwoo Kim, Ricky Fowler, and Jason Day. And then at 8:00, on the back tees, okay, they're going off 2 tees, Thomas Kisner and DeChambeau. At 8:02 also. So there's some pretty good pairings. Now, here's the group that I kind of question. 8:13 a.m. off the back. Dustin Johnson, Phil Mickelson. Okay, so here we go. Let's start cranking at it. And Graham McDowell.
Oh, really?
So that's... Oh. Yeah, so that's...
See, now normally Graham it's a funny thing. You know, on today's PGA Tour, it's mostly star-studded groupings, right? That's what you see a lot when you list them. It's Tiger and Cooch and Spieth. It's Ricky and Dustin and Justin, and you know, it's those guys. They kind of do the star thing. Where other people thought or think, maybe spread them around a little bit. It spreads the crowds out a little bit too, right? You got guys here and guys there and kind of everywhere. But in today's PGA Tour pairings, that's the way they normally do it. So for Graham to be in that group is a bit surprising. I'm happy for him to be there, but that's a bit surprising to see.
Yeah, but he's the shortest hitter in the group.
Oh, I mean, by
and it's going to be
50 yards, 60 yards, he'll be back there.
Phil, of course, Phil's very disciplined, and he'll have to discipline himself when he stands up on the tee box beside Dustin Johnson. But again, it's pebble, so it's not like a course you can really overpower. You can really mess yourself up.
Well, Phil, you know, when he plays there, and of course everybody remembers this back in January, the AT&T Pebble Beach. This is a great chance for the guys that do like that golf course, and Phil always plays it well and played. There's a memory to it, because a lot of times if you play at Marion, you play at Oakmont, it's not a regular tour stop, right? You're not playing there in an open that you're used to it. You go practice if you want and all that, but you're still not that familiar. This is a course that, for the guys, Tiger included, Spieth, for the guys that like playing at AT&T or like playing at Pebble Beach and play it well, this is their tournament. This is one that a lot of guys have to feel really good about, because most of the top golfers are really familiar with this. Of course, Tiger doesn't play or hasn't in a long, long time Pebble Beach at AT&T, but certainly knows the golf course, won an open there.
By the largest margin of victory ever. 15
I was there
strokes.
At that one. Yeah, that was a great one. And so he obviously grew up in California playing at all the courses up and down the coast. So there's a familiarity with a lot of the top golfers that will make Pebble Beach, I think, a very interesting venue for these guys. Very different, like I said, than playing at Medina and all the other ones that they kind of throw in that you only get to see once every 15 years hosting a major.
Okay, 147 off number one. Give me your opinion of this grouping. Francesco Molinari, amateur Victor Hovland, and Brooks Koepka.
Oh.
So it's going to be Brooks hits the drive, and then Molinari and Hovland hit two shots, and then Brooks goes for the green.
Hovland is the Oklahoma State kid, I think.
He is. Not? Yeah, he sure is.
Yeah. And so very, very good amateur, and so we'll see how he hangs there. That's got to be a bit intimidating. I don't care how good a college player you are. It's probably five different levels from college, right? You get the web.com, you get all the other Canadian tours and everything else above college golf, and then you get to the – so it's going to be – but having said that, I love seeing those guys that come out of college and make the cut and
sure,
you know, at least make a little bit of noise, so we'll see what happens there. But, yeah, Molinari, when you've got Koepka getting up there and just ripping the cover off everything. But did he not – I'm trying to remember at the PGA, at Bethpage, who was
– He did.
Who was playing – was Koepka playing with Molinari?
I believe so, yeah.
In the first couple of rounds, I'm trying to think that there maybe some round he played with him. I'm trying to remember.
Because
Molinari can actually, he's always considered like a guy who's not that long. But every now and then, he has such a beautiful little draw that he catches a ball. And again, he may not hit it 340, but he'll hit it 310 a lot of times. He'll hit it 305, which is long enough. It should be for most golf courses. So that, yeah, maybe you're hitting a wedge and I'm hitting a 9-iron or an 8-iron, but it's not, you know, I'm hitting a hybrid and you're hitting a wedge kind of thing. So, and they know their game, right? Those guys that don't hit it as far, whether it's Graham McDowell or Molinari or any of those guys, they know their game. So they're like, okay, if I have to hit 6-irons, I know how to hit a 6-iron from 195 yards or whatever. And even if you're hitting less of an iron, we've seen it a lot of times where guys have wedges in their hands and they don't even catch the green. They put it in a bunker. Or they put too much spin on it and it spins. And I'm like, what's the advantage of being 40 yards ahead if you're putting from almost the same place that I'm putting from?
Well,
whether I hit a 6-iron or not, if you can't get those wedges inside of 20 feet, it's not doing you any good.
Okay, we both know Pebble. Pebble doesn't have big greens, small greens. Advantage the great iron players. And speaking of that, at 209, this is the group I predict Woods will be in the top three after day one, because it's Woods, Rose, and Spieth at 209. That's an all-star group.
That's a good group. Man, there will be thousands of people watching those guys. And they go off one or 10?
They go off one.
They go off one.
So this is TV time.
And Spieth has really been playing well.
Yes, he is.
The last few tournaments, and it seems like he's kind of figured something out, whatever was not working for him. And I think a lot of it starts with
tee shots, and any of those, even Tiger, if you can't, there's just a frustration of hitting bad tee shots. It's not just there's a frustration that when you're going left and right and you're not sure what's happening, even when you get up to your shot, if you're even in the first cut, you're just still kind of ticked off from 3 minutes ago when you hit that tee shot, and it kind of lingers. If you only end up hitting five or six fairways, it's not just about how the results are. It's the results that I think oftentimes are part of the frustration you have, that you got to burn inside of you going, come on, just hit a tee shot down the middle once in a while. Versus if you get your tee ball going, well, I'll tell you what, you're not going to hit every ball within 5 feet or anything else, but you just feel good. That walk to the next ball is, your mind is clear. You feel good. You know, you're hitting straight drives and you're hitting them where you want to hit them. I think, you know, and Hogan said this too, as much as everybody says scoring clubs and wedges and your putter and all, I really believe that in a lot of ways, in a lot of tournaments, it all starts and stops with your driver. If you can hit your driver where you want to hit it, Molinari, I think the way he plays so well is he very seldom ever sprays it way far left or right, because he doesn't hit it that far. I get it.
Furyk,
but,
same thing.
But there's a comfort level of him walking down knowing, you know, I think I can find my ball because it's getting right in the middle.
You know, at 125 on number 10, speaking of Jim Furyk, it's Jim Furyk, Henrik Stenson, and Brant Snedeker. That's a good group. That's an accuracy group there.
Yeah. Those guys would be in a lot of fairways.
Oh, yeah.
There. And I'll be interested to see, you know, the greens at Pebble Beach on the West Coast are Poana grass.
Oh,
it's a very strange and I'll say a funky kind of grass. It's not good or bad. It's just what it is. Every region of the country grows different grasses. Poana, to Tiger's dismay and others, has a weird growing pattern, and it has little sprouts on it, if you will. So during the course of a day, it can grow a little bit more one side than the other, and over here. So suddenly you get some bounces on that grass, which is not August at all. That drives some people crazy as a ball is heading right for the hole and hits a little something and goes half a ball to the right. You're looking at it and you'll see these guys looking at their caddy going, did you just see what happened? So you got to play that game. You got to be like, okay, that's Pebble and that's Poana grass. But the U.S. Open, knowing that, it's going to be interesting to see how they set up this golf course, because that's almost always storyline, you know, 1B is how do they set up the course? How's the rough? How are the greens? Is it drying out? Are they going to be rolling 13 on the step meter and nobody can keep a ball in the green? Is Phil going to have to go chase down a ball and hit it before it stops rolling? All that's going to come into play, too.
Don't think that'll happen again this year.
I don't think
that'll happen. But listen to this one, 8:35 a.m. off of number 10. This is a sandwich. Jonathan Vegas and Louis Oosthuizen, sandwiched in the middle is Patrick Reed.
See, there's a name we haven't talked about lately, have we?
Patrick Reed. Well, Louis Oosthuizen's Mr. Steady Eddie, nicest guy you ever want to meet.
Yeah.
Jonathan Vegas, basically the same demeanor. And then you have Patrick right in the middle of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe they did that on purpose. You think? Patrick, calm down. Don't get upset. Let's get out here and play some golf. So Patrick's a good guy. He takes some bad rap sometimes, but he is a good person.
Yeah. But he says what he wants to say, and so you can like it or not like it that he speaks his mind. Some people don't like that, but you always know who you are with Patrick Reed. But we haven't heard a lot from him lately, and so it's going to be interesting to see kind of what he's thinking about how he's playing. You know, we got to remember too that, you know, we're midway into the season here, and I don't have the FedEx Cup points in front of me, but you know, there's some guys that are a ways back. Spieth, we mentioned, as far as making President's Cup and, you know, the 2 year run for Ryder Cup and all that. I mean, all that stuff matters to him as well. Matter of fact, I think sometimes it matters more than the paycheck, because they're like, okay, I want another 80 grand, 120 grand, whatever I want, but how many FedEx Cup points did I get? I got 50, I got 70, I got whatever. And some of those guys, I think Spieth was way back, and because of his recent last three or four tournaments, I think he's jumped, maybe he's in the 80s now or something like that in the FedEx. These are guys that are normally used to be in the top 20 all the time, top 15 of FedEx Cup points, and you're looking at...
Actually, Spieth's 66th.
Is he 66?
He's 66 in FedEx Cup points, and Kuchar still
and
sits
he was,
on top.
I think he was 190, Frank, like three weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's moved up quite a bit.
Here's the top 10. Kuchar, then 120 back is McIlroy, then Koepka, Schauffele, Johnson, Cantlay, Casey, Fowler, Woodland, and Rose. And Rose is 1,071 points out of first place. So
a win can change that for a lot of people. But
You know, there's like I said, if those are the guys, and you normally expect to see Spieth or Tiger and those guys up there. But when you're not playing a lot, that's to Tiger's point of not playing a lot. You don't get FedEx Cup points either. You know, again, we know that a lot of those guys don't care. Everybody cares about money, but it's not about the money. It's not about the money, but you got to play to get FedEx Cup points. You got to make the cut. You got to, you know, even if you get 20 points, well, we see at the end of the year what those points mean, whether you get into the playoffs or not, and where it stands for the, like I said, Ryder Cup, President's Cup, and all the different points. So, you know, all those things are factors as well when it comes to these guys. And we're midway through the season, so it'll be interesting to see how. I'm trying to think of somebody else who made a big jump. Who won right before RBC was what tournament?
Oh God. You're asking questions that we're supposed to answer without notes. Thank you so very much.
Where were they?
Come on. Look it up quick while I correct myself.
I know.
Not $10 million this year. Remember, it went to $15 million for the FedEx Cup this year.
Oh, that's right.
$15 million goes to the champion. So that's going to be a big number.
Memorial. They played Memorial.
Yeah, Jack's course. Yeah.
And so Patrick Cantlay, you know, he jumped way up when he won there, and at the Charles Schwab Challenge, Kevin Na won. So those guys win, you get 500 points. Suddenly, you know, FedEx Cup wise, a lot of guys are jumping way up. And I think it might have been Cantlay went from, you know, 280, 295, and then he won, and suddenly he was like 45th on the FedEx Cup. So those are things that are really important, those guys. By the way, that ties in with money. A lot of people don't know that a lot of these players have bonuses attached to their point standings. And if you improve your FedEx Cup point standings, or if you improve your world golf ranking standings, and say your deal is with whoever, Callaway, Titleist, TaylorMade, you get dollars for moving up in those rankings. So that's like side money that a lot of people don't acknowledge. You kind of see the winnings that these guys get when they finish wherever they finish in a tournament. But if you improve your, and a lot of times it's $1,000 a point. So if you win a tournament and you were ranked in the world 90th, and suddenly it moves you up to 50th because you win a tournament out of the blue, then that's like an extra $40,000 that you can win, and $50,000 here. And depending on different ones that they have, and different kinds of agreements that they might have, that they might be able to come back and you know, get that money from other sources that we don't even see. And again, that kind of plays into what we were talking about way back when with, are these guys motivated? There's so much money, right, that these guys make that we don't even realize. It's kind of crazy, you know, that sometimes it does take away a little bit.
Yeah, but a lot of that, keep in mind that a lot of that money, the more money they win, the more money that goes to charity, PGA Tour charities. Yep. So, hey, talking about 22 rookies are on the PGA Tour this year, okay?
Okay.
But you know who's sitting on top? Cameron Champ. He's ranked 49th. He's one shot or two shots away from not being in the final. He won. He's had 19 starts, 11 cuts made, and 3 top tens this year. So Cameron Champ is to sit where he is as a rookie is pretty doggone strong.
Yeah, and that is. I'd like to see him. I don't. You know, we haven't seen him an awful lot in the last few tournaments, and he's the guy that people have talked about for a long time as being farther than all the other guys as far as length goes.
Oh yeah.
Which is hard to believe because you're like, well, you can't hit the ball farther than Bubba. Well, you can.
Oh yeah, you can.
Farther than Dustin Johnson. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, you can.
And so Cameron Champ can do that. So he's a great guy to watch from the power standpoint. He's obviously got a very good game too, and a great story, you know, about where he came from and how he got to A&M and the whole thing. So yeah, I'd like to see Cameron Champ do a little something. The thing is too, when you mention rookies, there's other guys, and we mentioned Oklahoma State players that are playing at Pebble Beach. There are guys that are in the very near future that we're going to be talking about who aren't even on anybody's radar right now, who is the next Justin Thomas or Spieth or Ricky or whoever that might dazzle us. And they may not be all-time greats, but that's what's great about the PGA Tour is there's always somebody right around the corner who you're going to go, what? Where did that guy come from? Who is that guy? And suddenly he turns into a really great golfer. And that's what I love about it is it's, that's what's tough. If you're Furyk, Sneds, and those other guys that are kind of getting closer to 50 than their prime, there's always somebody young pushing you along, right? Going, okay, if I don't keep up with my game, the PGA Tour can be very unforgiving and say, you know, it is the survival of the fittest. And if you can't compete, if you can't make cuts, if you can't make putts, there's going to be somebody maybe younger and stronger who's behind you is going to do it for you. So that's kind of one of the cool things about
about the PGA Tour. One of the things I love about it is you gotta earn your food every day.
Well, we've come out of our normal of the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment today and talked a lot about stats and a lot about players, but it is U.S. Open week, and it is Pebble Beach, and it is the USGA setup that we'll see, and it is Fox Sports that will be broadcasting the tournament. So
yes,
it's going to be totally different than you normally see on the PGA Tour.
Yes,
from every aspect, from the broadcast, from the radio, from the shows that we do covering the U.S. Open, and we'll have some live coverage. Golf Talk America correspondents will be at the U.S. Open, and we'll get some live stuff later in the week.
Yep.
But it's going to be fun. I love Spieth's group. I just think that's just a perfect group.
Oh, yeah.
That puts...
What time do they go off, you said? 2 o'clock?
2:09, I believe it is.
Yeah. 2:09, and those are... California times? Is that Pacific times?
No, I believe those times are. Oh gosh, you know what? I'm sorry, I don't have that in front of me. I'll clarify that though.
Because I think
Vamp.
It's normally
Vamp.
I think it's okay. I got you. I think it's normally local times. If you look on PJTour.com, which everybody should check that out every day, and it has it. I think it's almost always local times. It like in California, it's 2:09 because if it's 2:09. Eastern time, they'd be going off, 3 hours early, 3 hours
earlier
than that?
Yeah, it'd be 3 hours.
Yeah, so I don't think that'd be right. So it's got to be that's like one of the last groups off, right? 2 o'clock?
Yes.
Would be one of the last groups off.
So that would be California time, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so that would be, whatever region you're in. I'm in mountain time now, Frank. I'm not used to mountain time. It's kind of a weird time.
Well, you're in the mountain. You're at 7,000 feet.
You don't know too many. Mountain time is like sheep and mountain goats and wildebeest. I mean, you're mountain time. It kind of goes all the way from Manitoba and kind of right through that mountain region of the country. But all people usually ever talk about is either, in our case, central, eastern, or Pacific. Mountain kind of gets forgotten. I kind of have to keep watching how far ahead or behind am I from everybody else. It's like,
well, see, I'm
it's
central.
An hour difference,
it's so it's an hour between us.
Yeah, it's an hour between mountain. Yeah, so I'm an hour earlier.
Yeah.
But I came from... Remember, I was at Martha's Vineyard
last week. So you came from...
my watch and everything, I came from Eastern. I passed through Central very quickly. By the way, we didn't even talk about this. I hope everybody in Dallas... Okay, I'm in Santa Fe.
Absolutely.
New Mexico.
Absolutely, yeah.
But we had horrible weather yesterday back in my hometown in Dallas. And like, seriously bad weather. Like, tornado, I think. I mean, I saw some video and stuff. And if it wasn't a tornado... I don't know what a tornado is. Just wind blowing sideways.
Straight
and
line winds are tough too. Yeah.
I think that's what took the
crane down in downtown Dallas, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, there was a crane building, an apartment building that went down. Cars were like on top of each other.
It
certainly looked like a tornado damage that came through. And very seldom do you see that. That normally happens kind of out away from cities. This was in Dallas per se, or within 5 miles of right in downtown Dallas, that the winds hit crazy. And big, huge live oak trees. I'm talking about like 200-year-old trees toppled over with the root ball, that's 40 feet around, pulled out of the ground. I had a small tree in my front yard that came down and broke in half or whatever and didn't do any damage. But I had a light pole that sits on my curb between me and my neighbor that one of my branches fell down and hit the wire that was on, which brought the pole down, which is now laying in my yard. And I don't know if it's a live wire or not, but I've been doing all this in a beautiful resort in perfect weather in Santa Fe. And my wife finally goes, "Hey, sorry to get on a sidebar here." She goes, "Hey, you know what the weather's doing in Dallas?" I'm like, "No." And so we're looking at it, we're like, "And it couldn't be nicer. We're sitting by the pool." And I'm like, "What?" And you're looking at it, it's like that commercial where the guy's stealing the other guy's car. He's going, "What? What?"
Yeah, what? Well, interestingly enough,
I'm going, "What's happening in my house?"
A very, very close friend of mine's wife, they're very close to me, is visiting here in Nashville. She just got in last night from Dallas. So Alan and Ann Brees.
Glad they got in.
Yeah, well, Alan's still there. I haven't talked to him this morning. I'm going to give him a call and see what's going on in Dallas. But I hope my favorite golf store didn't get blown away in Dallas, because I need to come back over there and see those boys. Anyway,
yeah.
No plugs.
Yeah. Hopefully. Yeah, I know. Hopefully. I mean, it's going to be, you're right. Golf courses, that's the major concern here, but
well, I don't think they lost
and trees and stuff.
I don't
everywhere.
Think they lost any trees on Trinity Forest, so we're not worried about that.
There is no water. There is no water on Trinity Forest. So yeah, anyway, I hope everybody's okay. And it was a really bad day that I think, once again, I'll rip on meteorologists.
Three weeks ago.
You hate those people.
3 weeks ago. 3 weeks ago, it was hailageddon, right? Just everybody get indoors. The hail is going to be the size of basketballs. It's going to be horrible. Nothing. Right. I mean, it was like it rained briefly and it was like, you're kidding me. And they all had to apologize the next day saying, well, they kind of missed out. This one, everybody, all they were saying was might have some rain. The wind might get nothing close to it. So I once again, I'm like, what do these guys look at? What are they? How do they not?
You hate those people.
See what's going on. I mean, this was horrible weather and they kind of thought it might rain a little bit. Might be a little bit of rain.
Well, and you know, we have
a foam pole in my yard.
We have a tour meteorologist and he does a great job for us.
He's the only one.
Week in and week out, he does a really good job. He's on top of it. We've had him on. We need to have him back on the show so you can rag on him.
Well, no, it's a very interesting. It's a science. I get it. I mean, it is a science. If you got to figure out what cold front hits, what high pressure system, I get it. It's a lot of predicting. And well, and whenever I get on him, Frank, when back in my TV days, and I get on the meteorologist guy, he'd say, "Well, Tim, then what I want you to do is tell me what the Cowboys are going to do for the next three games. Just give me the score."
Well, that's a good point.
Like, what? Yeah. And I go, "Well, I can't do it." He goes, "Well, there you go."
Well, you say they're not going to win.
He goes, "I can't." I said, "Well, yeah, but you guys, you're looking at." First of all, you get $4 million of computer equipment and radar right in front of you right here. Give me something with that. You got all this money that's going into out of my budget in sports. It's into your budget.
Okay. We're going to put the jacket back on Tim.
I know.
Lash it up. Hey, buddy, have a lot of fun in New Mexico. Be safe. We'll see you the latter part of the week.
Yep. I can't wait. U.S. Open this week, baby.
That's it, man. Can't wait.
It'll be fun. Okay.
For Tim Matthews, I'm Frank Bassett, and we will see you again on Golf Talk America. Thanks for listening, and be sure to go out and follow us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all that great stuff. Thanks again, everybody. Love each and every one of you, and we are out.